This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is made possible by Bluehost. Bluehost is my favorite hosting provider when it comes to setting up your own blog or website. What they do is, for a fixed price of just $6.95 per month, they offer you not only storage space and unlimited bandwidth, but also one-click installation of your blog. And that is very, very cool. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on our link, the link on our website, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale. By Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show that brings you the latest news surrounding the movies, the upcoming movies, dedicated to this wonderful book by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, Peter Jackson is at the helm and he expands the story. And, well, I think we're in for a treat because we get no less than three movies. And this show has been on the air for quite a while, just detailing all the little bits surrounding the production, but also the bigger stories of, you know, how is Peter Jackson treating this story and how is he expanding it? How is he changing and modifying it to the horror of the Tolkien purists, of course? But it is interesting. These are interesting times, perhaps the most interesting times since the production of the Lord of the Rings movies for Tolkien fans. And we've got a ton of news in this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. So let's waste no more time and dive straight in.
You're done. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Now, last week I teased it already a bit. There is a very, very well-known talk show host who appears to, well, might... Actually, we don't know. It's all a rumor, and we don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. Who might have a cameo in The Hobbit. And I am, of course, talking about Stephen Colbert of the Colbert Report. He is a huge fan of Tolkien, and he actually went to New Zealand to visit the set. And he talked about it in various interviews. And also, Peter Jackson talked about this visit by Stephen Colbert. And here's what Peter Jackson said in an interview with Entertainment Weekly. I have never met a bigger Tolkien geek in my life. Philippa Boyens is our resident Tolkien expert, and when Stephen came down to visit the set, we put him head-to-head with Philippa on a Tolkien quiz, and Stephen triumphed. Now, keep in mind that Philippa Boyens is one of the writers of the Tolkien Lord of the Rings trilogy for the script of the movies, and she's also one of the writers for The Hobbit. So she's been in Tolkien's world for decades, and still Stephen Colbert is able to beat her in a Tolkien quiz. That is saying something. So Peter Jackson continues in his interview, I have to say his encyclopedic knowledge of Tolkien is spectacular and points to a deprived childhood in some respects. Very funny. When asked about whether Colbert would actually appear in the films, he simply said, I read that too. It was very, very interesting. It's yet to be confirmed or denied. Isn't that interesting? And Stephen Colbert himself, of course, also talks about this. That's where the rumor stems from. Colbert also talked to Empire Online. And he says that as an enormous Tolkien fan, he was invited to the set last year by Peter Jackson. He states, I flew out and watched them shoot some scenes and went to some locations. I saw a 25-minute cut and it was amazing. Jackson knows I'm a big fan of the films. He saw a 25-minute cut. I Why am I not a famous talk show host? The interviewer then asked if Colbert actually managed to get a cameo role in the movie, and Colbert's response was, could be. Interesting. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and speculation about what that role might be. Of course, we've had some famous people show up in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, sometimes as characters without lines or an elf in the background or whatnot. And even Peter Jackson himself, of course, has a cameo. I think it was in, wasn't it in Bree that he pops up in the rain? I don't know. Is he gonna be an elf? Is Stephen Colbert gonna be a hobbit or a dwarf? Completely, you know, unrecognizable because of, you know, everybody is gonna recognize him if he's just appearing as himself. But I think this points to a cameo, and why not? I mean, it's very quickly done, and of course they would get a ton of publicity from this. After all, Stephen Colbert has a huge talk show, an enormous audience, and the previous times that he's spoken about Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, and he has a big Tolkien memorabilia collection at home, and he showed on the air, on the show, he showed his sword, his Tolkien sword. The movies have gotten huge publicity from that. So I imagine that if Stephen Colbert has a cameo, he's gonna be talking about that movie for weeks, if not months. So it's gonna be fascinating to see.
Open up the passage,
and anyway, that's something playing in the background on these websites that sometimes just play stuff. I don't know why they do that. Because we are talking about a lot of other different things here. Now, the biggest news that I wanted to share with you, and you've undoubtedly already seen what I'm going to talk about, are the two new TV spots that were aired. And these are absolutely fantastic because they show new footage and they give an answer to one of the important questions that we've been discussing here on the show many, many times in the past. And it has to do with the trolls. Our question was always, will Peter Jackson do what Tolkien does in the book? Will he let these trolls speak? We've not seen speaking trolls in the first three Tolkien movies. And so the story, of course, of The Hobbit has this whole dialogue between the three trolls, and they're speaking in this Cockney accent, and they debate with Bilbo about the ways in which they are going to cook him and the dwarves. And so we were like, will they be able to pull that off in a believable way? And especially, are they going to do the Cockney accent? Because that is kind of even stranger. You don't associate that with trolls. They are so big, and so you kind of expect a different type of voice. But anyway, these new TV trailers, these new TV spots, give us the definitive answer. Will the troll speak? Or will they not? Let me play this first one. I've got an American one, and then I've got an international one, which has a Spanish voiceover, and both of them are filled with very interesting new details. Let's see this first one.
I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure.
So, this is The Hobbit.
The dwarves are determined to reclaim their homeland.
My name is Bilbo Baggins.
Can we cook him?
I wouldn't risk it, I really wouldn't.
Can you promise that I will come back?
If you do, you will not be the same.
The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey.
This film is not yet rated.
Advance tickets on sale November 7th. In theaters December 14th.
Well, there you go. There you have it. Can we cook him? That was Tom, the troll Tom. That's what he says. And Bilbo replies, I wouldn't risk it. Now, this is different from the book. The Tom, of course, his line is, can you cook him? So not, you know, I don't know how to do a Cockney accent, but can you cook him is different from can we cook him? And Bilbo's reply, I wouldn't risk it. It's funny, but it's not in a book. Actually, the whole scene in the book is a little bit long, and I always wondered if that would work on screen or whether it would require a rewrite. Well, apparently that's what they did, and I guess that they kept the original the gist of the encounter and of the event, in the sense that we do get talking trolls, which I like. You do get this kind of funny dialogue, but it is just redone a little bit more, and we also have indications that the end of the scene, where, of course, Bilbo and the dwarves need to escape, is also going to be a bit flashier, a bit more action-filled than the way Tolkien resolves the situation there. But I think, from what I've seen so far, and especially now in this a TV spot, I feel good about this. I think they did a very good job, and it's going to be interesting to hear the other voices of the two remaining trolls. We haven't seen them yet. And then, of course, we get a return of the infamous bunny sled, and we see a new shot, and it looks like the attack of a huge wolf or warg. And of course, we know that in The Hobbit, Tolkien kind of uses both these names. These big wolves are called wargs in some areas in Middle Earth. Now there is one scene, I think, where this big gray wolf is talking to the other wargs and uses a warg language. Now I don't think that Tolkien ever developed that warg language. He was obsessed, of course, with languages, I don't think that we have any, you know, indications that there is a warg grammar or dictionary. So, which makes me wonder, will they continue to be faithful? Will Peter Jackson and his writers be faithful to the book in this respect as well? We've seen that the trolls will speak in the movie, just like they do in the book. Will these wargs also speak? I don't know. Perhaps not. That seems to me even weirder. I mean, after all, the trolls are kind of humanoid creatures. A wolf with a voice, I don't know if that would work. But it would be faithful to the book, of course. Now, the whole editing of this TV spot is very well done. It both gives you this feel of, you know, it's going to be an epic movie. You do see the Gollum. You see the most important dwarves, at least. It looks heroic, and there is some humor in it. There's some fun in it, and so that's exactly what you want to convey in a short clip like that. You know, it's going to be epic, and it's going to be fun. You know, it's the movie not to miss. Now, of course, this wasn't the only video. There is a second video, which also contains some interesting stuff, and some new footage, especially some footage from the dialogue between Gandalf and Galadriel. This is also a controversial scene for some, because there seems to be added dialogue, and even the way in which Galadriel and Gandalf interact seems a bit out of character, or at least it's nothing in Tolkien's book seems to indicate this type of relationship or the way they interact. But, you know, again, between the actors, it kind of works from what I've seen so far. And so it's interesting to see a little bit more about that. I think it's going to be quite a pivotal conversation that he has there. And the setting is beautiful. I mean, the way it looks, and there are some very short, brief glimpses of big sets or big scenes in the movie that are shown in the second clip that look absolutely amazing. I was wowed by this second trailer even more than by the first. There's also some more visual information. We see Thorin with his key. We also see a bit of the dwarven plate smashing. So here is the sound of this Spanish-flavored trailer.
Something moves in the shadows.
I found it is the small things that keeps the darkness at bay.
Me? No. No, 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 no.
We'll reclaim our homeland. Most of them bet you wouldn't turn up.
What did you think?
I never doubted you for a second.
El Hobbit. Un viaje inesperado. Próximamente solo en cines.
Próximamente. And it looks great. I mean, I've watched this one several times, and it's really, really cool. I love that conversation on the horses when they're leaving the Shire, and Bilbo is like, yeah, you know, were you sure from the get-go? And Gandalf is, of course I was. So the conversation between Galadriel and Gandalf is all about this coming shadow and the White Council kind of guessing that something is going on and there's some evil at the horizon. This is all, of course, building up to, you know, the big evil revealed in Sauron in The Lord of the Rings. But they're doing a great job already to establish the way in which Tolkien portrays the big battle between good and evil, and it's very different. And here we're touching upon, I think, the deeper layers of what Tolkien wants to convey. It's very different from existing mythology, where almost always a big evil, a huge enemy, is conquered, vanquished by an equally big, you know, good guy or a good army, or and by heroes. In Tolkien's story, and I think this has to do with his Catholic background, and we hear it here in this TV spot. It's the little things that keep the shadows at bay. It is a hobbit. It is Bilbo, who hasn't traveled anywhere, who doesn't even know how to hold a sword, and he is chosen. It's this whole theme of you know, your mission, your it's almost a let's say superhuman mission that Bilbo gets to go on this journey and to save the world. And he is totally inapt to do it. I mean, no one would have chosen a hobbit to lead this adventure, but Gandalf does, because Gandalf doesn't look at the world in a human way. He's not human. And so this trailer, I think, makes it very clear that Tolkien's core message is that it is that goodness is sometimes best understood by the small and the weak. And it is both the case in the story of the Hobbit, and even more so in The Lord of the Rings, of course, where Frodo is the leading character. But both Frodo and Bilbo are weak in the eyes of trolls and orcs and, you know, big shadowy figures. And yet it's by their simplicity, by their humility, their authenticity, dare I use that word, that they actually are much more resistant to the temptations of grabbing power, like we've seen with the ring, where the ring always tries to intoxicate people with that desire to become bigger than themselves. Well, with hobbits, that is a very tough thing to do, because hobbits actually like that simple life. They don't want to be big heroes. They don't have those ambitions. And so, in a way, they are much more they're much more apt to lead to the conquest of evil, because evil always tries to lure people into this, you know, the seduction of power. And with hobbits, it just doesn't work as well. So anyway, it's very cool to see that fundamental theme, I think, in this TV spot. And again, I just love the visual looks of this movie. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Now, another big news item in last week's news is finally we have the announcement, but also the track list for the Hobbit soundtrack. It's been highly anticipated, at least by me. I'm a huge fan of the music of The Lord of the Rings, and so also, of course, the music we're going to see in The Hobbit. And we know that they were recording this, and I think we talked about the CDs. There are going to be various versions. There's going to be a one CD version and then a two CD special edition. So we've talked about that before. It will be available on December 11th. But now we have the track listings for the CDs, and we also have some tidbits from an interview with Chor about his music. And so let me read that first, what he says about this. So Howard Shore, about the music he wrote for The Hobbit: "I have looked forward to returning to the imaginative world of Middle-earth for quite a while," says Shore. "I read all of the books by Tolkien, including The Hobbit, when I was in my 20s, and his deep love of nature and all things green resonates deeply with me." And then he continues, "It is a thrill..." Oh, wait a minute. This is not Shore saying this. I think this is a director. This is a bit confusing. I don't know who says this. This is crazy because it continues. It continues. This is another quote. Jason Lynn, who is the head of Water Tower Music, says, "It's a thrill for us to work with Howard Shore on The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey soundtrack. His reputation and body of work have long inspired us, and we look forward to another successful partnership as we embark on the next chapter of our journey together." So let's move to the track list, because, of course, as you can imagine, the track list contains information about the story. These musical pieces have names that are linked to the scenes for which they were used. And so it might tell us a little bit more about what we will see in this first part of the trilogy. It starts on disc one with a title called My Dear Frodo. And that, of course, is exactly what we expect Bilbo, the old Bilbo, to say. My dear Frodo. You can almost hear it. So that's an indication that the movie will start, as we, of course, almost certainly know, in I would say, modern-day Shire, with the old Bilbo and Frodo, the Frodo we know from The Lord of the Rings. And then there is a piece called Old Friends, followed by An Unexpected Party. So I think these two musical pieces are already taking place in the time frame of The Hobbit story. Old Friends is probably referring to Gandalf meeting Bilbo. Although I guess it could also apply to the old Bilbo and Frodo, perhaps. But Old Friends is something that that Gandalf uses, at least in the movie, in the first movie of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I wouldn't be surprised if Old Friends has to do with Gandalf. Either, his friends are the dwarves, or it's Bilbo, who knows. And then, although he doesn't know Bilbo, so it doesn't make sense. The second one is An Unexpected Party. Well, that, of course, refers straight to the beginning of the book, where the dwarves enter Bag End. And then we've got Blunt the Knives, performed by the Dwarf Cast, as it said. The Dwarf Cast. I suppose that is going to be a much more... kind of, that's not going to be symphonic music. I suppose it's music that will play while the dwarves are eating and throwing plates in the air in Bilbo's house. Blunt the Knives, and then Axe or Blunt the Knives could also be something that has to do with them going on an adventure. Perhaps this is already, I don't know, Blunt the Knives. It sounds like something that could be from the book itself. Of course, I could do a quick search in the book itself, which I have on my iPad. And I love that, actually, that you can just look for keywords. That's how I was quickly able to check whether or not the dialogue between the trolls and Bilbo was correct or not. Well, Blunt the Knives and Bent the Forks, here it is. It's from chapter one, and it is... Let me just read this. So I guess this is in... Yeah, this is while they're balancing columns of plates, each with a bottle on top with one hand, while the hobbit ran after them, almost squeaking with fright. "Please be careful. Please don't trouble. I can't manage." But the dwarves only started to sing, and here it is. "Chip the glasses and crack the plates. Blunt the knives and bent the forks. That's what Bilbo Baggins hates. Smash the bottles and burn the corks." So that's cool. It could indicate, if it's performed by the dwarf cast, that this is singing and that this is one of the poems or songs by Tolkien that has been put to music. And that's all. That's another thing that we've discussed here on the show before. It's what are they going to do with all these songs? Because The Hobbit is littered with all sorts of songs. Are they just going to skip over them? We've seen the animated movie from the 80s, I think. Where there is a lot of singing, but it's not very good. And so we were a little bit hesitant when it comes to, you know, these songs. In would they work in an epic movie like the ones that we're going to see? Well, this seems to indicate that at least one of those songs has survived and will be performed by the dwarves in this first movie. Very cool. Then we've got Axe or Sword. And then, very interesting, Misty Mountains, performed by Richard Armitage and the dwarf cast. So this, I think, Misty Mountains, is the song that we've heard in the first teaser trailer. You know, that very melancholic song about, you know, the Misty Mountains. And it's kind of what the song evokes, what the dwarves lost and what they are, you know, about to reconquer. So, and then the next track is The Adventure Begins. So this could be the music that plays, for instance, when we've seen photos from Bilbo Baggins running around in the Shire with his contract, you know, and he's like, oh, I'm going on this adventure. So that might be the music for that. It also could be the music played while they are leaving the Shire on these horses, you know, or ponies. And then the next track is The World Is Ahead. That seems to me like generic music, perhaps underscoring, you know, beautiful vistas and, well, the fantastic landscape in New Zealand when the adventure begins. And it shows you the bigger world, the world outside of the Shire, which, of course, Bilbo has never seen, but which he will never forget afterwards. And then the next track is An Ancient Enemy. It's very interesting. An Ancient Enemy. I wonder what that could be. This could be one of those flashbacks, actually. An Ancient Enemy. Perhaps, and this is one of the things that we speculated about, the dwarves, during their travels with Bilbo, will tell stories about their past, about their, you know, their struggles and their history. And it could show us some flashbacks to, you know, kind of giving more context to the current quest of going back, not just to get this treasure, but it's much bigger than that. It's much more important for the dwarves to reconquer what is theirs in their minds. And so perhaps this ancient enemy refers to Smaug. Who knows? Or, well, the ancient enemy could also refer to what? Sauron? To, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But I've got a feeling that this has to do with the dwarves. And that this is going to be part of a flashback. And then the next track is Radagast the Brown. Well, that's, of course, when we first get to meet Radagast the Brown. It's pretty straightforward. The next one is the Trollshaws. I'd love to see the Trollshaws because it's an area in the game Lord of the Rings Online, which I've played for many years. And so it's going to be very cool to see the movie version of that. And then the next track is Roast Mutton. Then it's A Troll Horde. And very interesting after that, The Hill of Sorcery and Warg Scouts. Now that refers to the warg, so perhaps that warg or big wolf that we see in the TV spot is just one of those warg scouts. This is straight from the Hobbit book. And then disc two contains The Hidden Valley. Again, very interesting. Doesn't really ring a bell right away. Actually, I should have just left my iPad open here so we can do a search and try to trace back these terms. Hidden Valley. I wonder what that refers to. If it refers to anything at all, it could also just be something that they added, or could be a name, a movie name for something else. Who knows? My reader does not find any matches for this, so it's not a term from the book Valley. There is Dale, of course, the old town in the valley. That valley is overshadowed by the mountain, but it's not really a hidden valley, is it? Of course, the hidden valley, now that I think of it, could also refer to Rivendell. That actually makes much more sense. And so, yeah, Rivendell. Oh, Inge is in the chat room, by the way, and she is very knowledgeable when it comes to to Tolkien. Yeah, the Hidden Valley must be Rivendell, and of course, it is kind of still hidden for us time wise because this is the first visit officially chronologically that we pay to the Valley of Rivendell. That's going to be the Hidden Valley. The Hill of Sorcery, according to Inge, is Dol Guldur. So very interesting that we will see Dol Guldur before we see Rivendell. It's another indication. And I'm just assuming that these tracks are in the order of the movie. Of course, they could have mixed that around, but I don't think they do. Normally, they don't. Normally, they just leave the chronology intact in these CDs or in these track lists. So we will see the Hill of Sorcery, Dol Guldur. I wonder how, though. Could that be Gandalf going there first? Interesting. The next track is called Moon Runes. Now, of course, this has to do with the writing that is only visible under moonlight. And they are not called Moon Runes in the book. They're called Moon Letters or Rune Letters, but not Moon Runes. That's kind of like taking these two terms and putting them together. Here is what the Hobbit writes about these moon letters. "What are moon letters?" asked the Hobbit, full of excitement. He loved maps, and as I have told you before, and he also liked runes and letters and cunning handwriting, though when he wrote himself, it was a bit thin and spidery. "Moon letters are rune letters, but you cannot see them," said Elrond. "Not when you look straight at them. They can only be seen when the moon shines behind them. And what is more, with the more cunning sword, it must be a moon of the same shape and season as the day when they were written. The dwarves invented them and wrote them with silver pens, as your friends could tell you. These must have been written on a midsummer's eve in a crescent moon a long while ago." Fascinating. And it's great that we're going to have that passage with music underneath. Very, very cool. Then we have the Defiler. The Defiler. Who is the Defiler? Punching it in, and let's see if we can find that in the book or not. This could be an orc. Don't you think? It's not in a book, the word the Defiler. But it sounds very aggressive and dangerous, so this could be an orc, could be Mazog. Who knows? Then we have music for the White Council. It's very, very cool. There's even an extended version of that music, which is also the case for several other tracks, which means they didn't use all that music. The composition itself is longer than what we will hear in the movie. Then we've got a track called Over Hill, A Thunder Battle, Under Hill. So that's pretty cool. We've got Over Hill, we've got Under Hill, and then we get the famous Riddles in the Dark, which is very cool because I was wondering how they would play this scene. Would this be the entire dialogue between Bilbo and Gollum? That seemed to be the case, judging from the interviews that we've heard. But then that is just dialogue. So how can they make that more interesting? Well, the fact that they've included music, that will definitely help make it more lively and give it even more atmosphere. So yeah, very, very cool. According to Inge, the thunder battle could have to do with the stone giants. Yeah, makes sense. 'Cause it sounds like thunder, but it is actually a battle between these stone giants. And we've seen that battle, or at least the dangerous side effects of that battle for Bilbo's company in the trailer. Then we've got Brass Buttons following Riddles in the Dark. Of course, that has to do with Bilbo's escape, and he loses his buttons there. And then we get Out of the Frying Pan. And that seems to me an indication that Out of the Frying Pan is probably action music that is played when Bilbo and the dwarves escape from the trolls. So while they are speaking with the trolls, there's probably no music. And then Out of the Frying Pan, I assume that this is going to be a very exciting action sequence. And so you need music with that. Also, probably because it's going to be funny. And so music always helps enhance that. And Out of the Frying Pan into the Fire is one of the chapter titles of The Hobbit, says Inge in the chat room. I'm wondering why I'm doing this show by myself. Why don't I just call you up on Skype and you can tell us live? Although I'm recording this, by the way, on Saturday evening. So officially, my producer is not working, but she's still helping me out in the chat room. Okay, I'll just give you a call, and then you can tell us all what all this means. As always, and it's always fun to have a second host on the show. The next track.
Hello.
Hey there. Thanks for hopping online. I know that I'm not supposed to have you on the show right now. I'm not even supposed to record a podcast.
I just pretend I'm not here.
There you go. So, Out of the Frying Pan into the Fire is one of the chapter titles. Is that the chapter with the trolls? I suppose it is, isn't it?
I think that's the chapter before the one where he goes to Lake Town.
Hmm. This is when Bilbo has escaped the goblins. It's chapter 6 in the book. And I wonder what the frying pan refers to.
I think it's a British or English way of saying. It's kind of a, how do you say that?
Oh, it's like you thought it was bad, but it only got worse.
Yeah. Yeah, so we in Dutch have also...
Yeah, we say you go from rain to drizzle.
Yeah, something like that.
It's kind of the same idea.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, actually, I'm looking at this. This is not at all with the trolls. There is a scene, though, where they are hungry, and they're talking about food. But I think the only thing that Bilbo gets to eat are some blackberries. So there's no real frying pan in this.
No, I just did a quick look for it. It's an idiom. It means if you get out of one problem, but you find yourself in a worse situation.
Excellent.
You're out of the frying pan, all into right. the fire.
Well, that clears that up. Of course, our longtime listeners know that I'm Dutch, actually Ingo also, so sometimes we miss that stuff. Anyway, Out of the Frying Pan. And then the next track is A Good Omen. Don't know what that would refer to. A good omen. It's a good sign. Some encouraging sign for Bilbo. Omen. Again, it doesn't ring a bell. And there is, as
maybe,
far as I can
tell. Maybe I'm thinking it could be. At one point, they kind of scout the Lonely Mountain and they find a door. You know, with a Trusk sitting there.
Uh huh.
And maybe that is referring to it, because the other one is the Song of the Lonely Mountain. So if it's in sequence.
Okay. Yeah. Could be. So the last track, or one of the one before the last one, is called Song of the Lonely Mountain. But that is the song actually that will be performed during the credits, performed by Neil Finn. And then the last track is called Dreaming of Bag End. That could refer to anything during the journey. It could just be, you know, Bilbo thinking back of what he left behind. But the I'm a little bit confused, to be honest, when I see this track list, because I wonder where this movie will end. We've always speculated that we would see, in the first movie, we would see them being captured by the elves in Mirkwood. We would see the whole barrel escape and then their arrival at Lake Town. But I don't see any music for that. And if this is just, you know, Out of the Frying Pan is chapter 6, this movie might end even earlier than I anticipated. Although we also have that quote from about the Eye of Smaug potentially being the last thing we see.
Yeah, but that makes sense then. If, for example, a good omen is that they find the door with mm-hmm. a key, where the key fits in, from I think Trine? Was it Tror or Trine? Mm-hmm. One of the both. He had a map, and Thorin gets the map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the moon runes on it. So at one point, the good omen could refer to them finding the door, that and the key that fits. And then it could be the end could be that they moves to Smaug sitting in there, and of course also in the Lonely Mountain.
That's true. That's
kind
true.
Of a cliffhanger type of ending.
Yeah. But does this all happen after they've been in Mirkwood, or before?
Yes, because they escape Mirkwood.
So why then is there no music? Why is there no music for Mirkwood? I'm confused. It doesn't make sense. I mean, you can't do... Mirkwood is so important.
Maybe that's out of the frying pan referring to. They escaped the goblins and everything, mm-hmm. and they're now in Mirkwood, and they are now getting chased by spiders and angry elves.
I don't know. Yeah, perhaps. Or perhaps there's no music, or at least no symphonic music in the Mirkwood scenes. What is possible, of course, is that the elves will make some music, but that it's going to be kind of like in-movie music performed live on stage, as it were. And so, therefore, perhaps not include it on the CD.
In the book, the elves of Mirkwood are depicted a little bit as silly elves, not at all as the elves we know from the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are more the party elves. So I can see that there's lots of drinking going on. That there also will be music to go with the wine.
But it's not here on the track list. There are some exclusive bonus tracks on I assume the special edition of the soundtrack. One is called A Very Respectable Hobbit. That must be from the beginning of the movie. Erebor.
That's the Lonely Mountain.
Yeah, the Dwarf Lords, and the Edge of the Wild. So that all.
I'm intrigued by the Dwarf Lords. Would that refer to the early Dwarf Lords? You know, the first.
I think. I think it's going to be part of that flashback about the history of the dwarves, because they need to establish that. It's already indicated in the trailers and the TV spots that we've seen that this is an important part of the first movie. It is establishing why these dwarves go to the Lonely Mountain. And I think, I'm almost sure that they will show that in the flashback, and so it makes sense that the Dwarf Lords, and the fact that they have two musical tracks for that might indicate that it's quite a bit of a flashback. So, and then of course, what kind of flashback is it going to be? Is it going to have the same style of the kind of establishing story at the beginning of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where it will be almost like a poem and it will be just an illustrated song or something like that? Or whether it will be a flashback like, I don't know, in Lost, the TV series, where you have an entire scene or several scenes and actors playing and having lines. And something tells me that it's going to be more like based on a poem or something like that. That feels much more in line with what Tolkien.
Well, of course, it's an epic story, and it's also copied from an epic story, like in the time of the Edda.
Mm-hmm.
And those epic songs would be poems. Also, all the elder epics are poems, and they would be sung by bards back in that time and age. So it would match the genre.
Absolutely. Well, if people want to pre-order that CD, I just want to mention very quickly that we are an affiliate of the Amazon store, and one of the ways in which you can support our show and help us pay for the bandwidth, etc., is by clicking on that Amazon button or icon that is on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. If you do that, then it won't cost you extra, but it will actually help us. It will support us financially, because Amazon will share a little bit of their profit with us. So go ahead and order, you know, that life-size orc set for in your backyard. But do it while clicking through our link. Right, let's take a short break.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
There was a great interview with Richard Armitage, who is, of course, the actor who plays Thorin, the most important of the dwarves. And it is full of interesting information about the production, but also contains a few spoilers about his character in the Hobbit movies. Some of the things that are said in this interview, Armitage reveals that Thorin's beard is all his own. It's not prosthetic. He says, once we'd decided what the beard was going to be like, I realized I could probably grow it myself, he states. He also gives a hint that we will indeed see the backstory of the dwarf wars. All of the fight skills have been really useful, but because I play the character younger as well, he fights in a completely different way to when he's older. Isn't that interesting?
So if he plays the character younger, it means the Battle of Azanulbizar is in the movie.
I think so too. This could be confirmation. Absolutely.
He mentions war and battles, so it must be.
Sweet. Absolutely fantastic. So he plays his younger self, which indicates a big flashback, and then he talks about the fighting style, which means that we're going to see a battle. And he says, my younger self fights in a completely different way to when he's older. He's much more crazy and berserk, and as he's got older, it becomes more efficient, so he doesn't waste any energy. And then other intriguing remarks in the interview include a discussion of tension between Thorin and Gandalf, which is quite obvious, especially in the first trailer that we've seen, where, you know, Thorin is very skeptical, of course, of Gandalf's choice of Bilbo. And then Thorin's attitude to the burglar they have to take along on their quest. So there's going to be some tension between Bilbo and Thorin as well. So fantastic. I love these little leaks and spoilers, and I think you're right. We're going to see Azanulbizar. They're going to be a lot of happy Tolkien fans.
Do we know more about dwarven spears? Is, for example, Dwalin's spear also tucked in his belt?
I don't know. We've seen photos of the dwarves, and I don't remember that. But I think that Armitage is the only one who grew his own beard. And I think in the interview, if you read the entire interview, it also was for practical purposes, because if you do a lot of fighting, he said, the fake beard just looks fake. And so I've got the interview here. It's online on the website darkhorizons.com. He was very surprised, by the way, that he got the role. He never really inquired to play a dwarf. So, and he had to go straight to work when he was there. He was very nervous about it. And then, let's see, there was some more information here. Here's about the beard. When it comes to the action stuff, and especially water and any kind of battle cry, a fake beard just starts to lift, and there's much less fuss with this, and it looks better, I think. Very cool. And then in order to get a feeling for how the dwarves felt at the beginning of the story, he says he used the devastation in Hiroshima at the end of World War II as an inspiration of the kind of devastation that drove the dwarves away from their homeland. So it's really a traumatic past. His character isn't as concerned with the treasure that awaits so much as scoring retribution. I think he's thinking less about the gold and more about his people and his own personal agenda with his grandfather, his father, and his nemesis, Azog, who slaughtered his grandfather. I think the burden of taking his people back to their homeland, which is so massive, makes him a lonely figure. Isn't that interesting? So he mentions Azog, and Azog slaughtered his grandfather. We already know that Azog, contrary to the book, is alive. And so will there be a big confrontation between Thorin and Azog? I think that's where the story is going to take us. It's going to be epic. Fantastic. He also talks a little bit about the 48 frames per second issue. This is more technical. And he says, in terms of the fantasy creatures, I think at 48 frames a second, they sit much more comfortably with real characters. So real actors and created characters, I think that gap between them is lessened from what I can gather. He also admits he's not a fan of 3D, but says in this case, its use here is justified as it's about texture and showing Middle-earth in a way that is tangible so that you feel like you're really in there. There is so much of the world, like Mirkwood, where every opportunity there is to develop and enhance the natural world has been taken. Very cool. And then he talks, of course, about the excitement of being in Bag End, you know, in Mata Mata on the set outside and first seeing the Shire and then the first day of filming with Andy Serkis. And I love reading that stuff because you can tell that these actors, even though they're seasoned actors, they're just as giddy about this and fanboyish as we all are. So that's very, very cool. If I think about it, I'll include a link to this interview in the show notes. Otherwise, you can just easily Google it and find it. Now, let's move to a little bit of the smaller news.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
So guess who is the lucky bloke who gets a sneak preview of The Hobbit? It is none other than Prince Charles. He is accompanying the Duchess of Cornwall to New Zealand, where they will celebrate the prince's 64th birthday. And his birthday present is going to be a visit to the Hobbit Film Studios. He will be meeting Sir Peter Jackson, visit the Weta Workshop, view the prosthetics and makeup, and get a sneak preview of The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. A royal spokesperson has this to say: "The prince is a great fan of children's literature, and Tolkien is one of the great icons of children's literature. He and the Duchess have seen Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings films, and the prince has said he is very much looking forward to seeing Bilbo Baggins' foot." What? He is very much looking forward to seeing Bilbo Baggins' foot. Is this some kind of fetish thing? Strange. Very strange.
Tolkien is not a children's author. He's just known for his literature, and The Hobbit happens to be a children's book, or envisioned as a children's book. But that's he's more known for The Lord of the Rings, I think, than The Hobbit.
Well, I don't know. In a way, The Hobbit is written for children, so I just didn't know that Prince Charles liked children's books. Anyway, let's move on. Speaking of the whole projection and the 48 frames per second, of course, many of you are wondering, where can I see this movie in 48 frames per second? Because this is new technology and a lot of the theaters have not upgraded yet. Well, I got a tweet from one of our listeners, Matt Shaw, so a big shout out to Matt for that, to a site with an international list of 48 frames per second theaters, which is awesome. Of course, the biggest list is that of the United States, with the state of California being the place where you want to be, because they have tons and tons of theaters that will have this 48 frames per second upgrade. There's also one theater on Hawaii, so Inge, perhaps we should go there to watch the movie, because I've been checking the list for Europe and there's nothing in the Netherlands. There's not one single theater that has 48 frames per second. There doesn't seem to be anything in Germany either. Well, wait a minute. No, there is Bochum and Münster.
Münster is doable.
That's doable.
Münster is doable from Enschede.
Absolutely.
You should make a field trip there.
But, you know, and otherwise we can always go to Norway. they got five theaters there. What? I didn't even know that they had five cinema theaters in Norway in general, let alone 48 frames per second. Unbelievable. Anyway, the list is incomplete and they're still working on it, so there might be new additions to that list. And I kind of secretly hope that we get at least one theater here in the Netherlands.
I kind of hoped that the Amsterdam IMAX would have the projection.
You never know. They might upgrade. Ian McKellen, in an interview, says he loves the 3D results so far. He's very, very positive about it. Of course, he's seen big chunks of the movie, and he indicates that they're still working on it. So not everything is ready yet. So I guess that the 3D, especially because, of course, they're enhancing so many of the scenes with CGI, they filmed everything in 3D, but that doesn't mean that the entire 3D composition is finished yet. So, but what he has seen, he loves. Speaking of Ian McKellen, according to another interview, there was actually a risk that he wouldn't return at all as Gandalf. He had serious doubts of reprising his role as Gandalf. Of course, one of the reasons is that an actor always tries to do new things and to, you know, kind of like develop new characters. And in the case of Gandalf, it would basically mean going back to what he had done before, you know, been there, done that. So he says it was like going back to something that wasn't necessarily going to be to be particularly challenging. Gandalf is still inside me, as it were, so the business of getting to know a new character, I was sort of going to be robbed of that. But then he realized how much his absence would let Tolkien fans down. He says, "You felt how many millions of people are waiting for it. They wouldn't understand if you weren't as keen as they were." And so that's why he returned. And probably also, you know, a little
bit of... in a lot of money.
Money would also help convincing him.
I wonder if it would have made a huge difference if someone else would have played the role of Gandalf. Because there was this Harry Potter movie where also... Mm-hmm. one of the main characters, wasn't Dumbledore?
Dumbledore. Well, the character, the actor died, so they had to change.
Yeah, but I see. Yeah.
It was traumatic. It was terrible. But anyway, that's fortunately not happening to the role of Gandalf. And actually, now that he's back, he says he enjoys playing Gandalf the Grey. He actually prefers it over Gandalf the White. And he says, Peter Jackson and I much prefer Gandalf the Grey, who was a man who did manage to enjoy himself. So Gandalf the Grey is not as serious as Gandalf the White. Yeah, he has a point there.
He didn't die, so I can see how that makes you serious.
Yeah, probably. Dying does that with people.
Rumor has it, yeah.
Let's wrap things up because we're already playing the end tune. I've got a few minutes left to bring you up to speed with a few minor news items, especially related to the promotion and merchandise. There's going to be a new library reading campaign around the launch of The Hobbit, which is very cool. They did that for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and they're going to do it again, at least in the United States, around The Hobbit as well. The first tie-in books will be available next week already, and they look amazing. So these are books, you know, like the companion or the guide to The Hobbit, and so we're going to see a lot of, I guess from there, we're going to see a lot of spoilers popping up on the web. Amazing. The books are... The ones that were done for Lord of the Rings are absolutely fabulous coffee table stuff. If you order them, again, think of us, you know, go through our link on the website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. We also saw new character posters, which are fabulous. These have just popped up, I think today, the day that we're recording this. They show the dwarves, most of them, but also Galadriel. Amazing. I mean, fantastic posters. Go check them out. There are some huge Weta sculptures on the airport in Wellington and elsewhere in the city, made by Weta, of Gollum. So now if you land in New Zealand, you'll see Gollum hanging there. Quite stunning. And then since you've been flying with Air New Zealand, you will have seen that Hobbit flight safety video. I won't play it here because it's very long, but it's hilarious, and it has a lot of cameos in there. Several people from the OneRing.net, but also I think the grandson of Tolkien is in there, and Peter Jackson makes an appearance and disappears again because he puts on the ring. It is fantastic. I'm sure you've seen it already, but I will include a link in the show notes just to be sure that you see it. All right, that almost wraps it up. If you are hungry these days and you want to eat something inspired by The Hobbit and the world of Tolkien, there is now an official website made by Warner Brothers with recipes for Middle-earth. Not only can you find recipes for Hobbit food that you can cook yourself, but you can also contribute to that database. I think it's a great idea, and I can totally see some parties where people will dress up and eat like true hobbits or dwarves. So, all right, that wraps it up for today. Check out our website at sqpn.com for many other shows that are related to popular culture and movies and books. I'm very soon starting a new series about the upcoming Star Wars movie. So if you're into that, of course, with the new Disney takeover of Lucasfilm, there's lots to talk about there. So check it out, all that on sqpn.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm Father Roderick. And you can follow also... Hobbit Podcast on Twitter, and whenever we do a show, that's where we post when we go live. Thanks to our folks in the chat room for their contribution. Thanks, Inga, for joining me today, and we will see you next week on The Secrets of the Hobbit.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.